the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
We're in the middle of a crypto winter, and it's a brutal one. Think back to November of 2021, when Bitcoin traded at $67,000 and Ethereum was close to $5,000. Those were happy days when millionaires were being minted virtually by the hour. But sadly, those days are gone. This morning, Bitcoin traded at a little over $16,500 and Ethereum at just over $1,200. And we've been nearly, some of these altcoins are down nearly 90% compared to what they were a year ago. And think back to what happened just a few weeks ago when the FTX exchange collapsed and its sister company, Alameda Research, went with it. Probably the most significant crypto failure of the year. We started out with the collapse, we started out the year with the collapse of the Terra Luna stable currency, and that bled into crypto lenders like Voyager and Celsius and Three Arrows Capital. Now, for crypto enthusiasts, you may feel a little shell-shocked at all of this and wonder, where is it going to all end? Well, joining us to explore this is Paul Casarin and Brandon Toppin. Paul Casarin is co-founder and CEO of Petrock Investments, which offers a range of crypto-focused investments, including a Bitcoin fund, an Ethereum fund, and a US dollar stablecoin fund. He's got a background in fintech and digital transformation, having previously worked with companies like Woolworths, Naspers, eBay, ShopRite, and TFG. And also joining me on my left is Brandon Toppin, who's no stranger to the MoneyWeb audience. He's perhaps best known as head of enforcement, was head of enforcement at the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. He served as a member of South Africa's Parliament, as well as on the Trade and Industry, Finance, Auditor General, and Appropriations Committees. He's a qualified CA, and he's also got a background as a forensic accountant. And he's an admitted attorney, and I believe quite recently an advocate of the South African Bar. He's also a non-practicing member on the role of the Solicitors Regulation Authority of England and Wales. Most recently, he's taken up a position as CEO of Creston Forensic, focusing on crypto and regulation. Welcome to you both, Paul and Brandon.
Good to be here.
Thank you, Kieran.
Okay, so let's start off with you, Paul. Are you shell-shocked by what's happened in the crypto market in the last few weeks? Is this the worst we've ever seen or we're likely to see?
Yeah. Firstly, thanks, Kieran. Thanks for having me on the show. And thanks to the audience who actually are busy watching. I think I'm more disappointed than shocked. At the beginning of the year, my colleagues just warned me about the bear market. But no one could actually predict over the last couple of months what happened to all these major crypto companies. If you think of it, FTX was one of the largest exchanges in the world. So no one could have predicted that. So it's a little bit disappointing to see. And if you look back a year ago, a number of people were, because prices were going up, a number of people were buying crypto. They believed that the prices were going to skyrocket. But now, looking back, there are worried people out there. They're worried about their funds, what's left of them. They're worried about their funds and exchanges. And they're worried about crypto market as a whole. And there are a couple of people out there just looking at the opportunity, looking at the great opportunity, and they think that the bottom is in and it's a great opportunity to buy. So people are at different places, but generally it's a worrying time.
Brandon, let's turn to you. You've been on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast a few times, and I think people will remember, those who've listened to you before, that you were quite skeptical about cryptos. And I think maybe that was shaped a little bit by your experience in cracking down on Mirror Trading International and a few other crypto scams that came out. Cryptocurrency being used as the currency for a lot of scams that came out of the woodwork. You did warn us of the risks of this. Do you feel vindicated?
Well, I think too many people have lost money, serious amounts of money, to have any self-satisfaction. But the problems that have happened recently aren't so much crypto failure, but I think regulatory failure. And I think we'll discuss that a little bit more going forward, because, I mean, FTX was really a bank that wasn't licensed, and the crypto was just, for instance, the cover. And many of the scams that exist out there aren't the crypto that's the scam, it's the scam. They're just, the payment mechanism is the crypto, and that's why we have to regulate the crypto environment to allow some certainty with for the players and for the public in general.
I think that's an interesting point that you raise, because one of the arguments that has been made is exactly that, that FTX was operating like a bank. So you had this fractional reserve lending system where they had deposits that belonged to clients. They were on-lending that and then leveraging it in exactly the same way that banks do it. And of course, that's a recipe for, if you don't have the oversight of a central bank or a bank of international settlements, you're going to get that kind of collapse eventually.
That's correct, yes. And the difference, sorry, is that to have a bank, you need three things generally in place. You need expertise of management, track record. You need to have reserves, as in your own money or shareholders' money, not depositors' money. And you need proper systems, proper banking systems. And if you look at what's going around at the moment, it looks like FTX had none of those three. And that explains why the collapse happened to an extent.
All right, Brandon, let's stay with you. Mm-hmm. So you were crucial to the recent rollout of no doubt what is the beginning of crypto regulations, or certainly not the end of crypto regulations. And so in future, we're going to see financial products and crypto companies, they must be licensed as financial services providers, and they've got until November of next year to do that. This comes at a time when South Africa is seen as a bit of a nursery for crypto scams like Mirror Trading International, which you were personally involved in shutting down. But it looks like, despite this, hardly a week goes by that we aren't coming across some other crypto scam coming out of the woodwork. Will these regulations help drive the scamsters out of business?
I think this is simplify crypto quickly, though. There's put in two parts. You get the crypto or the product provider, the crypto itself, the Bitcoin, the Ethereum, all the virtual, the various stable coins, the thousands of other currencies or assets out there. All right? That's a completely other problem that's not going to be solved overnight. But the second part, the middleman, the intermediary, the advisor, that's where regulation right now is focused on, and that's the starting point to crack down on the problems. You know, if you want to invest in anything, you want to make sure that the person you're giving the money to, the person giving you the advice, knows what he's talking about, is not going to run off with your money. The fact that the products you're going to be advised onto are not regulated, that's a completely different story for now. But yes, in the long run, regulation will make the crypto environment much safer for everybody in it. It will still be a volatile market. You still have to be extremely brave to venture into that, and that's why you need to use experts. You know, most of crypto trading now is derivatives. I don't understand the first thing about derivatives. Okay, I understand the first thing about derivatives, but not the second thing. And very few people do, and that's why you need experts that have the experience that can help you make sure that when you put in your hard-earned money at risk, at least there's some intelligence besides your feeling that the market's going to go up or down.
All right. And I think before we came onto the show, you were telling me that you do actually invest in cryptos now. Last time we spoke, you were not an investor.
Well, no, as publicly said, I wouldn't buy a crypto, but I believe there are a couple of billion people in the world, and they are rather gullible, and they're going to keep buying, so I may as well gamble with the rest of the world to a very, very small percentage. Okay. If I was a serious investor, I would have to give it to a proper management firm. You know, there's one sitting on your right, for instance, that could assist you there. Rather than me. I mean, I'm just long-term speculating.
So just a following question from that. If you've been buying crypto, have you been dollar cost averaging down as the price has been going down?
Yeah, I'm an accountant. When the price falls, I'm looking at it with a little bit more interest, yes.
Okay. All right, Paul. I don't know if you saw this week that emerging market expert Mark Mobius reckoned that, he's warning actually, that Bitcoin could go down to $10,000. This morning it's at $16,500. That's a long way from the $67,000 it was in November of last year. Are you a bit worried that there's more bad news to come out of the woodwork and the flight from risk has still got some distance to go?
Yeah, Kieran. I think, first of all, the one thing is for certain, no one can predict the top and the bottom of the crypto market. Absolutely. That's one thing. I think my 15-year-old son predicted the top of the market last year, so... But I think in general, you can't predict the market, especially in crypto. Mark actually is also famous for saying that what goes down will generally come up. And you just have to show a little patience and not hit the panic button. So I think over the last week, we've watched Bitcoin miners specifically start dumping some of their stocks, some of their Bitcoin. just to stay afloat. So that is one of the indications that the market is kind of looking at, like a bottom, but no one can predict anything. So absolutely, I'm not there to do that. I think as crypto as a whole, as a market, I think people are really nervous. And we've taken a long-term view. So if you look at crypto, it's actually part of blockchain technologies. And we fundamentally, our investment thesis is based on the blockchain technologies and what they can do for the world, for people, for different industries, including financial services. So if you take that long-term view, the investment thesis in the technology is pretty solid. So we don't look at the price of Bitcoin, but we take that longer-term view. And what is really concerning, though, for us is to look at our customers of exchanges right now. Because internationally, many people took their money off exchanges because of FTX. And now people are worried. So we've actually been in discussion with two very, very large exchanges in South Africa. And the one exchange would like to keep their customers' coins on the exchange. And they're showing the proof of reserves on their home screen and just trying to settle the market down, which makes a hell of a lot of sense. The other exchange that we're talking to, they have come out and recommended that their customers don't leave their coins on the exchange. So they're two different views. And if you're out there and you would like to actually take hold of your coins, if you'd like to take self-custody of your coins, the same thing that a lot of people overseas are doing, you have to learn how to do self-custody. So what that means is you have to set up your own wallet and you have to transfer your coins off an exchange into your wallet. So I brought a couple of gadgets I'd like to show you. I hope you don't mind. Sure. But they're super interesting and they're quite unique. So they're great for Christmas presents if you are keen.
Do you sell them or these are just... Did you buy these from somewhere else?
I don't sell them. I actually bought them online. You can't buy them from an exchange either. Definitely not. And what you can do is, I've got three here, and they're three hardware wallets. I don't know if you can see a picture of it at the back of us, but I'd like to show you the first one. So this is called the Ledger. It's a hardware wallet. It's a super useful thing. It looks like a memory stick. Now, what it does, it stores your private keys. So when you want to remove your coins from an exchange, you open up a wallet, and you will get a seed phrase. Now, your wallet is protected by private keys, and what you can do is you can actually store your private keys on one of these hardware devices. So it's an extra level of security. So every time you want to transact with your coins, you actually need this device, and it's got a little pin on it. So you can lose your pin. It's kind of like a cell phone. You try it too many times, it goes dead. And they're quite expensive. It's about 3,000 Rand, 1,000 to 3,000 Rand. Good Christmas present, the 1,000 Rand one, I think, for Christmas.
What's the brand?
This one is called a Ledger, and there's a couple of brands out there. There's a Trezor and a Ledger. We don't recommend either, but I personally own a Ledger. And then there's two other examples. Now, just as I said, as a client and you would like to actually own your own crypto, you have a wallet. When you open a wallet, they'll give you a seed phrase. Now, the seed phrase is is 12 words or 24 words. It depends on the wallet. And then you have to store that seed phrase somewhere. So it can't be under your pillow. Yeah, two products.
Hardware. No, it can't be digital. Don't put it on your computer.
Well, yeah, not digital, and don't text it to someone. You have to be super careful. Once someone has your seed phrase, they've actually stolen your coins.
Call up those
here's
pictures.
An example of a hardware wallet that stores seed phrases. If you have little kids in the house, it's just keep it away from them because it's actually fun to play with. And if the letters fall out, you also lose your phrase. There we go. And this one is a cylinder. It's a crypto steel wallet. So you can open it, and inside is your seed phrase. So here's some examples of how to store a seed phrase in case your house burns down.
Just explain on that cylinder there, because that looks like a cigar case. Yeah. How would you enter the seed phrase on that?
So what happens is you have to open it, and there are a number of little discs that you put on. words, and then you use a pencil to identify what the seed phrase is. So it's quite difficult, it's quite tricky, but it's kind of fun and it's quite cool. Then you have to store these and you have to make backups of these because once you lose this, you lose all your money. And because we're all South Africans, there are other risks associated with this. And so you just have to be super safe, super careful. And why am I showing
you mean the risk
this?
Of somebody pointing a gun at you and saying, what's your seed phrase? To go try and get their hands on the crypto.
Exactly. Well, ironically, you are the worst person, not you, Kieran, but the investor is probably the worst risk out there because you send your coins to the wrong address. You lose one of these things. You forget where you wrote it and you put it. Or you store it somewhere, you give it to someone, or someone steals it from your house. So the investors are ironically one of the big risks. So this is one of the reasons why we started PetRock, you know, just to mitigate all these things, all these devices and all these issues and the pressures and the risks and the counterparty risks that come with exchanges. And we want people to actually start considering, including yourself, Brandon, crypto as a more of a longer term investment. And when you start looking at crypto as an investment, then you have to start worrying about things because it's a lot of money and you don't want to lose it.
Okay, Brandon, let's turn to you for a minute. In the intro I said that you were formerly with the FSCA, the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. So you're no longer there. Your new venture is CEO of Creston Forensics. Never heard of that before, but your focus is on cryptos and on regulation. I'm a bit surprised because I remember you as a crypto skeptic. So tell me about Creston and what services it provides.
Well, Creston is just an accounting firm like Deloitte or PwC, except they're number one and two, and Creston's number 13 in the world. So this is a much smaller player, but it's a niche market, which allows me to advise my clients who effectively are in the crypto space, how to comply with the coming regulation, how to make their businesses a lot safer, etc. And I personally believe that self-regulation is a starting point in this industry. Unfortunately, many of the players right now in South Africa want to wait for regulations to come out, and I believe that that's just going to hurt them in the long run, because all that's going to happen is that you're going to have regulations that are so strict that you probably have to be a bank to almost play in this market. And somewhere between no regulations and too much regulation, we have to find a balance. So that's one of the jobs that I've got at the moment. And all the frauds that are taking place very often do involve crypto, and it's a very specialist area that I know nothing about, effectively. Right. I pretend to know a lot, most people do, but it's an area that is so diverse that no person can really understand, and you have to have a very wide range of team, people that know cybersecurity and that understand the crypto world very, very well to be able to unravel a fraud properly, and that's what we are going to do at this company.
I was contacted just this week by somebody who was saying that he said that financial advisors can right now give advice to their clients on cryptos. And I was a bit surprised by that too. Is that true?
Well, because the regulations only kick in next year, therefore it's still in no man's land. So I can give you advice on crypto. Anybody can give you advice on crypto. Okay. But there's good advice is another thing. And that's part of the process which is coming out with the regulations that were published or for discussion, etc., is what level of experience must an advisor have to be licensed to give you advice. And that's where the inputs of the sector need to come in. I mean, the regulators understand traditional financial advice. But what really excites me about the crypto space is not the crypto assets, as we see them primarily now, but what's going to come from this. The decentralized finance, the smart contracts, that's the future, I believe, of the financial sector to a very large extent. You know, if you look at the banks and insurance companies today, they will have multiple accounting systems or information systems that are written in different periods of time, sort of talk to each other, etc. I believe that in the long run, they will be replaced with blockchain type of record keeping, etc. So that's why people need to have an input at this early phase into what level of experience is required to give advice on some of the really complicated financial instruments which are still going to be developed and which I don't believe people even dreamed about yet.
Right. There was a question I wanted to ask you about the regulations. I take it this is the start and that there is going to be more comprehensive regulation. I mean, people maybe not understand that in terms of the Reserve Bank Act, that does cover crypto, because any transfer of an asset outside the country is governed by the act or the regulations that underpin it. So I presume there's going to be more regulations around crypto.
There definitely will be. And there's a bill in Parliament at the moment, I believe it's about to be signed, that's going to make it compulsory for crypto asset service providers to actually comply with anti-money laundering requirements with the Financial Intelligence Centre, etc. Many of them are doing it voluntarily at the moment, but it's about to become law. Definitely a lot more, Reserve Bank rules are going to come out or more directly with these crypto asset providers as to how to allow or to facilitate the transfer of wealth out of the country. At the moment, it's covered, but not everybody is complying with the law, I don't believe. And we have to do that. One of the unique things in South Africa is we have control of our foreign reserves as such, restrictions, which is unlike other countries. The other area, also is the payment side. At the moment, people will argue that crypto is a payments mechanism, all right? And some will say it's ineffective, and others will say it's just not fast enough and efficient enough. But going forward, you're going to have crypto stable coins that are going to be super fast and super efficient. They will be able to create gateways into unbanked markets of the world. And that's also going to hit squarely with the regulatory environment of the PA and the Reserve Bank.
Right. Okay. I think one of the stable coins, just for people who may not know what that is an asset which is backed usually by a fiat currency like the US dollar or the rand, but it's a facsimile of the dollar. It isn't a real dollar or it isn't a real rand. But it can be you can use it for payments. It's recognized pretty much all over the world, and you can complete that transaction in seconds rather than doing an international transfer through the SWIFT system, which could take days. Which is a very interesting use of blockchain technology, is it not?
Yeah, but I still prefer Visa and MasterCard personally. But I think as we go forward in time and as the banks, and I believe banks are going to become far more involved in the crypto space, that you'll be swiping, you can pay with a crypto asset or a stable coin or not. It's really going to be about the mechanism to deploy and whether the vendor is able to accept it or not. But yes, stable coins are very interesting and I believe the most important part of the future of the crypto world.
Okay, Paul, let's turn back to you. One of the trends that we are seeing in the last few weeks, particularly since the collapse of the FTX exchange, is that people are removing their coins from exchanges. Now, they're doing that because they're afraid, because what they discovered to their shock and horror was that FTX was on-lending their crypto without their permission to a sister company, and that sister company was taking massive and risky bets with their coins. All of this raises the question is, where does decentralized finance and decentralized exchanges fit into that? Because the interesting thing, and this maybe needs a little bit of explanation if you can for a minute, what is a decentralized exchange? What is decentralized finance as opposed to a centralized exchange, FTX being a centralized exchange?
Yeah, that's a great question, because what we saw over the last couple of months is the failure of centralized exchanges, centralized finance, at least in the crypto sphere. One of the examples was FTX. Now, decentralized finance is actually something that is not centralized through its definition, and it's actually programmatically done on the blockchain. So, for example, there are decentralized exchanges, and what we do, for example, is we can put our coins on a decentralized exchange, and you can swap coins, you can provide liquidity on the exchanges, and you can actually trade on those exchanges. And there's no one there to actually do to facilitate facilitate any of those trades. It's pure code that's written on the blockchain. So that code is written in smart contracts, and the underlying one of the dominant underlying operating systems of the decentralized exchange is Ethereum, and the Ethereum was actually born because of the ability to actually programmatically write specific code that actually you could transact with, and there are a whole lot of rules around it. So decentralized finance, they don't use centralized actors, they don't use any centralized companies, and it's pure code. Now, that might sound frightening, but if you look over the last 12 months, specifically over the bear market and the collapse of centralized finances, there was very little to no collapse of the decentralized finance applications running on the blockchain. So,
and the reason for that is because nobody has the power to be able to misuse your tokens. There's no counterparty risk on a decentralized exchange.
Yeah, there still is counterparty risk, but there's no one in the back behind the curtain taking your money and putting it in a pocket and doing something else with it. The code is the code, and you can actually see it. So you can actually go use a browser. You can go and inspect the code. So if you are code literate, if you're an engineer, you can actually go look into a decentralized exchange, for example. You can go into a smart contract, and you can go and inspect the code. That code is also audited by third-party providers. So that's audited code. It sits there. It's available to engineers to look at. It's available to people to inspect. And it operates as expected. So there's no one behind the curtain, takes your money, goes off on holiday or to the Bahamas, and it's actually pure code. That's why decentralized finance actually works extremely well. However, what you've seen is we think that's the combination between the good things in the centralized finance, because we still need KYC, we still need AML that Brendan was talking about, we still need strong regulations. We've seen now the benefits and the necessity of regulations, but if we can marry the benefits of decentralized finance with the benefits of centralized finance, we got a good deal. And that's where I think the world is shifting towards. So it's not one or the other, it's going to be a combination of both, just using blockchain technologies.
Okay, so we've got a question here for Paul. How would investing in Petrock Investments be less risky than FTX and Celsius? In other words, what are your chances of failure?
Yeah, a great question. I don't know who it's from. I would love... Oh, there.
It says Heloise.
Heloise. Thanks, Heloise. That's a really good question, because if you think about it, there are a number of South Africans that were caught out with FTX. Absolutely. I know one or two of folk who actually had money in FTX and it went into bankruptcy. They actually lost their money. And same with Celsius. So a lot of South Africans...
We're not certain yet that they've lost their money, right, with FTX?
No, they've gone into bankruptcy. So both Celsius and FTX have filed for Chapter 11 and they go into bankruptcy and you're going to get a portion of your dollar back. So you're going to get maybe all your money back or some of your money back. Thanks, Brandon. But hopefully you get a good portion back. Now, Celsius and FTX are two different business models. So one is a lending business model, which is Celsius. Now, Celsius was actually an unsecured loan that you were making. You were giving your coins over to Celsius. It was an unsecured loan that you were giving to Celsius. Celsius were taking your coins and they could do what they liked with it. Actually, if you look at the proceedings in the bankruptcy case, they've actually taken ownership of it and they've told the judge that they actually own the coins. They are just unsecured loans back to customers. So this isn't banking and regulation talk. This is just a pure unsecured loan to a company, which is fundamentally an issue with Celsius. If you look at FTX, now there were a number of bad actors behind the curtain, and because of the lack of regulations, like Brandon was saying, FTX got away with a lot of things that we are still uncovering, and there's going to be a ripple effect across the market. But a lack of regulation, bad actors, and the company was using customers' funds, customers' money, to actually go do other things with it. So fundamentally wrong. At Petrock Investments, we have actually seen this, and we've spent about a year or so looking at what the best way to do it is. And actually, what we did is we just copied fund structures, what customers would expect out of funds. So what we're really sure about is that if you are a long-term investor, and if you don't want to trade and speculate and worry about coins and wallets and things like that, you need to actually place your money in a fund. Now, the way we set up funds are just the way folk normally are used to funds in South Africa. So funds are totally separate, legal structures, legal entities. And as a fund manager, we make sure that the funds themselves come through the bank into the fund structure, and they are the coins are purchased and kept in safe custody. And if we do mine for yield, all the benefits go back to the fund. So no one touches that fund, and the fund is open and available to customers. And a third party and a fund administrator every month comes and makes sure that all the coins and the net asset value of the fund is intact, and they report independently back to customers. So you can just see all the checks and balances are there. It's nothing new. So Petrock Investments, we didn't invent this stuff. We just took and borrowed all the best practices from the great funds that we already have in the country. And we followed that practice. So you can see that's fundamentally different to an exchange that went bad, which is FTX, the example, and also the lending practices of the other companies that take your crypto as unsecured loans. Great yield that you can get with unsecured loans to companies. So if you do see the opportunity in the markets that someone offers you fantastic yield for your coins, you must ask twice, you must read the T's and C's and start worrying, you know, when I give you the coins, is it an actual loan that I'm giving you? What are you doing with those coins? What are you doing with the money? Are you actually doing something behind the scenes with it? Am I going to get my money back? And these are the issues. So if it's too good to be true, it's probably to probably stay away from it.
We just add, you are a registered financial service provider as well, are you not?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
So there
you
go. I'm so sorry.
Part of the ones.
that was the other very, very big important thing. It took us a while to actually establish ourselves as a regulated service provider, and we take it extremely serious. So we have a key individual in our team. Who's absolutely, he comes from a bank, he's highly regulated after 20 years being in the bank, and he helps us through our processes. So we have that robustness built into our operating system, if I can say that, and our fund flow. And we really care about this independence. So that's what's different between maybe a fund and a company that takes crypto loans and an unregulated exchange with some bad actors behind it.
I think one of the points that I just want to emphasize that you're making there is that so you've brought in proof of reserves is part of the baseline reporting which is going to be expected for crypto companies going forward, right? So you're going to have to be able to show, we say that we've got this amount of crypto, and the auditor independently verifies that that is what we've got. What you have done is you've taken something which is commonplace in the traditional financial sector, where an independent administrator would go through and he would communicate directly, or she would communicate directly with the clients and say, yes, the fund has these stocks or bonds on your behalf. And it's not the fund manager saying it, it's the independent administrator doing it.
Yes.
You're applying that same best practice to the crypto space, correct?
Same principle. And the proof of reserves is just the beginning of starting to count the assets behind the curtain, if I can put it that way again. But that doesn't make an exchange a bank. I mean, Brandon alluded to it. He called an exchange a bank, but then he also said, wait a minute, they don't operate like a bank and they don't have the same regulations as a bank. So just looking at proof of reserves is just a one-dimensional factor of looking at the governance that an exchange needs to actually operate like a bank. So even the proof of reserves is just like a single dimension, you know, it's just like counting all the assets, but it doesn't count the liabilities. So you don't know, if you borrowed against the assets, you don't know what's going on in there. And that's where the complication lies.
Brandon, you got a question here. Did you want to say something?
I want to clarify something there. Mm-hmm. An exchange may not look like a bank if it just creates the market, the opportunity for buyers and sellers to come together. But when that exchange starts to hold the money, the crypto, and when the exchanges start to on-lend it, and FTX is not the only one doing that. There are people in South Africa on-lending the money. And when they start to do derivative trading on that, that's when you start to cross the lines, and that's why the need is for regulations to make sure people stay in their lanes and they have the correct cyber security is the next fundamental step. You know, if you don't have the right systems in place, and you're going to have a problem.
Okay, a question for you, Brandon, from Tuffy. What are the main concerns from a South African regulatory perspective around crypto assets?
Firstly, they're not even looking. The regulators aren't even looking at regulating crypto assets, because that's something that may not be able to be regulated. Then the first problem links to the first one in the fact that there are two main crypto assets in the world today, which has very fundamental issues what's underneath it. So that's part of the problem, that you've got a dominance. But the reality is that crypto assets is far greater than those two predominant assets. And that's where the future is. And these two predominant assets is taking up everybody's attention, but we're not thinking about where the raising of funds for your company in the future is going to come in. So there, that would be in South Africa. The CIPC would regulate that in terms of a prospectus, which I don't even know whether they're even considering at this point in time. I'm sure they are, but how do you raise funds using a crypto, a coin, a token linked to a profit share in your company? So that leads me to effectively the second problem, is that it crosses so many regulatory departments. It affects, for instance, the Department of Trade and Industry, it affects the Finance Ministry, and as you start to get clever with a stable coin that has barrels of oil linked to it, one coin represents a barrel of crude oil, etc. You know, there's so many other complications.
It's a derivative then.
Well, no, that would still be a stable coin, because linked to the coin would be a fundamental asset, in my opinion. Okay, but when you start to link a coin to a potential barrel of coin, or the price of the barrel of oil, that's when you start to play the derivative markets. With my first step knowledge of derivatives.
Okay.
So because it crosses multiple, even just in the financial side, you've got the Financial Intelligence Center, you've got the Reserve Bank, you've got the Prudential Authority, you have SARS, has got an interest, and of course you have the FSCA. That would be your predominant players at the moment. So getting them all to talk together and work together takes time. So that's the issue. Time is your
biggest issue. I think we mentioned this point earlier, that there are already laws under which cryptos fall. For example, if you're making profits from cryptos, in terms of the Income Tax Act, you're going to have to pay your share to the tax man. If you're transferring money out of the country, in terms of the Reserve Bank Act, that's also covered there.
But I mean, that's where you've got a more principal base. But effectively, FTX, for instance, in South Africa, we would have gotten away with it, because they took deposits from the public, but the definition in the bank said of a deposit involves money, so they weren't a bank. So if they were operating in South Africa, they wouldn't have been covered. So where you've got a principal, regulating something is much easier, but when you've got fundamental definitions, it's a little bit more difficult.
Paul, can we come back to you? I want to talk about some research that you did, which is very interesting research into financial advisors in South Africa. And they can now include crypto in their portfolio of investment products. So that's quite a breakthrough because regulations are coming. So you are working with advisors to assist their clients. Tell us about this research. What were the key discoveries, and what's the reaction generally been of financial advisors to cryptos?
What we find, Kieran, is that first of all, we did the research before the regulations hit. So before the 19th of October, we actually conducted our research. I think it was around the month of August. It was around 2 months. And we asked an independent research body in Johannesburg to actually conduct research for us. They reached out to about 5,000 folk. And we had a super response rate. And what surprised us is that a huge portion of financial advisors were actually buying crypto. I think it was around 66%. It was in the 60s. And also their clients, they actually said that their clients also buying cryptos, but they weren't speaking to each other. So that was the number one thing. It kind of made sense because that makes logical sense. What is really intriguing for us is that the financial advisors also said that over the next 12 months, 72% of financial advisors said they are planning to allocate crypto into client investment portfolios, which made us super excited because if the advisor and the client actually get together and start looking at cryptos as an allocation into their investment portfolio, then it's a different story. Then it's not just a DIY buying it yourself on an exchange on your phone. It's talking about crypto in a sensible way, talking about the risks, talking about the potential upside and downside of cryptos and how it should fit into an investment portfolio. Because we and our team, we think that it should be part of an investment, but it should be a small allocation into cryptos because of the volatility and the nature of crypto assets. They are volatile. We understand the nature of the actual the category, and we recommend a small allocation. But you can only do that when you are actually having this discussion with financial advisors. So that was really comforting for us to see that there was a very positive view on crypto in terms of financial advisors and their attitudes towards crypto.
And were they educated in cryptos? Did they know what they were talking about?
There were diverse views again. What was so interesting because their source of education was from YouTube. So this is a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, YouTube is phenomenal, but it also comes with some of its entertainment, some of its not financial advice. Other is just pure nonsense. So it's a little bit dangerous. And what we also found, though, through deep discussions with some advisors, is they know a lot about crypto. They've been in it for a while. They've been trading with crypto. They fundamentally understand it in their own personal capacity without the advice. So there are generally different folk in the market, and some folk just won't touch it, which is also understandable, totally understandable. So we saw this diverse view coming out of the research.
So as low as cryptos have gone this year, the good news is that financial advisors are really about to kick this into a whole higher gear, right?
Yeah, we hope so. So what we saw a year ago is a lot of people actually speculated. And super simple to buy crypto. You just need a phone and some cash, and off you go. You can start buying crypto. But now, what we are going for in our investment thesis is that if you'd like to invest in blockchain technologies, if you'd like to invest in cryptocurrencies, then take a longer term view. Have a discussion with your financial advisor, and do something that actually makes sense. So it doesn't break the bank, and do something that makes sense for your overall portfolio and what it can do for that. So that is a long-term view into investments in blockchain technologies. Now, also our view on blockchain technologies is super interesting because it means a lot to a lot of people. So we've taken three different sort of themes to blockchain technology.
Before you go there, just explain, break it down. Why is blockchain such a breakthrough?
I was going to break it up into areas because there's so many things to talk about. It's not one dimensional. And it's phenomenal for us. And it seems so simple because it's just a decentralized database, right? But actually, when you start unpacking that and seeing the benefits thereof, it's actually phenomenal. So let me just go through some three examples. And they actually relate to our funds in a way. The first one is the future of money, which is actually a lot to do with Bitcoin. So Bitcoin was the original cryptocurrency, and it's quite unique, and it's dominant in the market. I think Brandon was alluding to that now. So it takes up 40% of the total market value. It's just one cryptocurrency. Now, there are over 20,000 cryptocurrencies, as Brandon was starting to talk about. And So Bitcoin as a whole is quite phenomenal. It's the original way to transfer money, and it's the original methodology of digital payments. So Bitcoin is going to be the front runner for digital money. It's absolutely phenomenal. So hence our Bitcoin fund. So that's the future of money. Then there's the future of finance. I think you're starting to talk about that with DeFi and decentralized finance. That's what we are super excited about, because all the aspects of blockchain technology make the entire financial services market rethink all their processes, because the things that come with blockchain technologies is actually quite revolutionary. For example, decentralized finance. And the ability to actually do a lot of the financial transactions with our central players. So underlying to that is Ethereum, which is the actual operating system that allows people to program on it, write applications on top of the blockchain, smart contracts, which actually have all the rules in place for the future of finance. So there's a huge part for Ethereum to actually play and to revolutionize the world of financing, and blockchain will actually disband right across a whole lot of industries. So the future is phenomenal. A simple example is provenance, which because every transaction is recorded on the blockchain, you can actually follow a transaction right to its beginning. So can you imagine just picking out something in a grocery store? You can follow that. If that was recorded on the blockchain and where it came from, you could follow it right back to the farm. So the blockchain can work in financial services, but in a whole lot of different other areas. And the third part that really excites us is the future of the internet and the web that we know it. So that might sound a bit theoretical, and it's still early days, but if you look at the web now, what's scary is that one person in Silicon Valley can actually turn off Google for you. So can you imagine a day without Google? You know, no searches, probably no email from you, Kieran. And but if you had an Android phone like you do, your phone would be a brick. So there are centralized companies right now that control a huge portion of the internet. So it's the same with social, you know. One person...
Well, just an example of that. Presearch, for example, is a blockchain-based search engine where you cannot fiddle with the results, and it's very good. So we've just been talking about, you know, the problem that you have with centralized exchanges and centralized control of anything, including your search engine like Google does, and you have now... possibly the future of search engines. It's going to be fantastic what's coming.
Yeah, it's crazy because, as Brandon said, we don't know what's going to happen next. But from an investment thesis, we have a long-term thesis on the future of blockchain technology, and we believe in that. And hence our funds and hence our long-term view. So it's not speculation anymore. We think the future is bright. We don't know what it's going to look like, but it is phenomenal.
Brandon, I want to turn to you. Do you see a serious role for cryptos in the financial sector? Or is it going to remain peripheral for those who are looking for a bit of an adrenaline dump?
The accountants, the economists, the businessmen hate to come to this conclusion. But effectively, the crypto technology is yet to stay. I'm not certain about some of the crypto assets. Some of them may not be around. But the technology behind them is definitely going to be in the future. And the decentralized finance, the smart contracts, and what you do with it in the future is going to play a major role in the financial sector as a whole. And then also is going to make access to the market once we find the rules. I said earlier that it's very difficult to regulate the crypto itself. But for instance, certain stable coins will be easily regulatable in the long run. Decentralized exchanges and things like that may not be easy to regulate, because who are you going to regulate? So you'll end up with regulations that will apply more to the centralized people, and then decentralized will probably be outside there. But they'll have a role to play, and maybe a very important role to play. But yes, the answer to your question is I think it's here to stay. The fact that some of the biggest funds in the world are invested in it, either because it's, we don't want to be left out and the fear of losing out, and until this year, nobody was ever wrong for investing in the major crypto assets. But now people are starting to reconsider, and hopefully a more a conservative approach and a rational approach will take place in the investment world in the future.
Well, I think more than 50% of Bitcoin holders are now underwater. So you were right. Up until a few months ago, it was the case that it doesn't matter where you bought, you were pretty much guaranteed to be in profits. Okay, Paul, we are getting a little bit short of time here, so I've got a few questions to rattle through. Why would one invest in your Bitcoin fund or your Ethereum fund? I mean, can I not go to Luna or Altcoin Trader or Valor and buy Bitcoin myself and self-custody it? Well, what's the value that you're adding in your Bitcoin fund and your Ethereum fund?
Yeah, absolutely, Kiram. I mean, someone can go and they can definitely go onto an exchange and they can purchase crypto themselves. As I said, they just need a phone and some money and off they go. But if someone wants to invest in blockchain technologies, they want to take a long-term view, and it's actually quite a significant investment on their side. So it's something that they can afford to lose. And what our clients come to us, they don't want to worry about wallets. They don't want to worry about the counterparty risks and all the other things that come with a store and seed phrases and things like that. They want an investment that's very similar to what they already have in terms of their investment portfolio. And they're looking to invest in crypto just like their other investments. So they come to us for that, and that's what we offer. That we also, our funds are, as I said before, they are set up in terms of a traditional fund structure. So we have a fund administrator that reports back to clients to let them know where their assets are and what their yield is that they're making on the assets and what their balances are. So it runs like a fund. It's for long-term investors who are interested in blockchain technology investments and see a long-term view for it and see a major upside. So that's what our funds are set up for. We've actually lately we've been really helping customers actually get off exchanges and move their cryptos into our funds. So that's been a very recent thing for us to actually just comprehend, just to help existing crypto exchange customers just to move their cryptos out of exchanges and into funds. So that's quite a new thing for us. But you can see that fundamentally there are two different things here. The one is a long-term investment opportunity, which is in blockchain technologies, and the other one is definitely has its place as well.
Okay.
Can I come in there? Sorry.
Yes.
Do you own shares directly in the stock exchange yourself, Kieran?
No.
Do you own shares directly in the stock exchange yourself?
No.
Do you have CIS, Collective Investment Scheme?
Yes.
Do you? Mm. All right. That's a fundamental principle. You don't invest in something you don't understand. Because what people don't understand is that there's not one Bitcoin market in the world. There's not one exchange. There's not one price. There's prices all over the world. They don't understand what the miners are doing in that country or that country. They don't understand the sentiment around various things. So you'd be a fool. You can play around a little bit for the fun of it, a little bit of money, to put your money directly in the stock exchange. You go through fund managers that understand the industry, that understand the sector. Same with any form of investment, this is why it's got to be regulated, is that if you want to be a longer-term player, not a gambler, not a speculator, then you should allow people that sort of understand the whole industry. They'll get it wrong from time to time, probably more often than not, but they can get it right more often than you as a man in the street that doesn't know anything really. You think you know about Bitcoin. And all the youngsters that come to me and tell me they're forex traders or they're crypto traders, etc., they know more than gamblers because they really don't understand the market, and you don't understand the market. No matter how clever you think you are when it comes to Bitcoin, there's probably very few people that know it. And even then, you need a team of people with different knowledges of any market, be it crypto, be it commodities, be it shares, whatever form of asset class. And this is just one asset class. a highly speculative, risky asset class, but it's still an asset class.
What about stable coins? Okay, talk about that, because that has been the big surprise and the big growth market within crypto, where you've got Tether, you've got USDC, you've got Binance USD. These are stable coins backed by the US dollars, and I think of the you've got three US dollar backed stable coins in the top 10 in terms of market cap. Do these have a future?
For certain, provided they have the actual dollar behind them. Okay, that's where it comes to proof of reserves. They must be audited. There should be an audit certificate published monthly by the audit firms. There should be proper rules in place that the regulators put into place that say this is what we expect from the fund to publish, etc. So that is the thing about cryptos. It makes it easy to get into the market, effectively. So it's much easier to go and buy a crypto which has a backing of Standard Bank shares, for instance. All right, that's a bad example because it's easy to buy shares in South Africa. But let's say a barrel of oil. I don't know when last you bought a barrel of oil, but it's not easy to buy a barrel of oil or something else, effectively. And that's where the stable coin. And also linked to stable coins in the future is going to be things like, well, it's already happening, a timeshare. You buy a right to use an asset or part of an asset. And we're not even in the non-fungible token section yet. So yes, stable coins in my mind is what gives crypto credibility. What gives it lack of credibility are those other coins that we're not going to mention now.
Okay, so we just got a couple of minutes left and we haven't even touched on non-fungible tokens, which is really a way to make digital assets scarce and to make them tradable. We'll leave that for another day. I want to get to a final question for you, Paul. Somebody who's just getting into crypto for the first time, what should they do? Should they go to Petrock Investments or should they go somewhere and just buy some Bitcoin or should they avoid it altogether?
Wow, Kieran. I think it depends. We actually encourage people to go and purchase some crypto on an exchange, on a local exchange, using their phone and see how easy it is, because then they actually feel they get a feeling for the actual coins that they're purchasing. If someone wants to take a long-term investment, then it's a different story. Then it's a lot of money and you have to be very careful. And that's when we encourage people out there to actually speak to their financial advisors firstly, absolutely. Because then you'll get a good insightful independent view. And then at least you don't have to always listen to your financial advisor, but at least they make sense. You know, they're going to cover the risks and they're going to speak about your investment portfolio and how much to spend and how to actually make sure that you don't actually take too many risks in terms of your overall portfolio and your savings, which are super important.
Well, what if your financial advisor knows nothing about crypto? You wouldn't go to him for advice.
Well, first of all, your financial advisor should know something about money,
okay,
and should know something about speculation and the risks associated with that. They may not know everything about crypto. We actually encourage both financial advisors and clients out there. We have a website, petrockinvest.com, and people are welcome to actually come online, subscribe. We have a cool monthly newsletter we're launching next month, and we have a lot of information there for financial advisors specifically, legal structures, tax advice, and things like that, just some guidance, and a lot of info on our website. But it is a difficult and complex discussion. I think that's what you're alluding to. You know, yep. It's not a simple thing. And okay. People must just be wary.
All right, we are going to leave it there. Thank you very much, Paul Kasserer. Brandon Topham, great discussion on cryptos.
Thanks, Kieran.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.